in a context where we're all using most of the same open source machine learning models, 90% of which are TensorFlow from Google, right? What defines what defines differentiation?
Early to bed, early to rise, eat right and advertise. Early to bed, early to rise. And one more thing, get your name out there.
Hello and welcome to Paleo EdTech. I'm Marty Kine.
And I'm Jill Royce, and we are the hosts of this podcast that looks at the first two decades of advertising and marketing technology.
From DoubleClick to DoubleVerify and everything in between.
Get your name out there.
This week, we are very happy to welcome Tom Chavez to the program. Tom is currently founding partner at Superset, a technology portfolio company based in the Bay Area. He started his career in the 90s as an engineer at Sun Microsystems. He co-founded a publisher-focused platform called Wrapped that was acquired by Microsoft in 2008. He then co-founded the data management company Crux in 2010, and Crux was acquired by Salesforce in 2016.
So I grew up in Albuquerque, New Mexico. I'm one of five kids. I'm the middle kid. I'm a Mexican-American person. Mom and dad had grand ambitions for the family. They didn't go to college, but they sure wanted their kids to go to college. The family lore is that my mom, when she was growing up, got into an argument with one of her 10 siblings. And you know, they're growing up in the barrio in Albuquerque, and you know, Spanish is the main language in the house. No TV, no running water, all of that. And so she gets angry at her brother and says, one day I'm going to have 10 kids and I'm going to send them all to Harvard. I mean, they don't speak English. And the good Lord saw fit to only give her five kids, but she did send them all to Harvard. So I got out of college and then I wandered a little bit. So it wasn't quite a straight shot. So I wandered around the world. I lived for a year in South America. I was in Rio de Janeiro. This is the period of my life when I thought I was going to be a big rock star. I was playing music. I was a very avid musician. And so I was playing music. And I came back to graduate school, was probably the world's worst graduate student because my heart was still in Brazil. Out on the road playing music and doing other things. So I spent some time figuring that out. Finished graduate school. So in computer science, I was a pretty good coder, but I remember there was this moment in college at like 3 a.m. in the morning in the science center when I'm finishing a programming assignment next to somebody like Vivek, who is my co-founder at Wrapped and Crux and today at Superset. And then I just realized, holy cow, this guy's got me licked. Like I'm an okay programmer, but not really good. I better get my ass to graduate school and go learn some more math. So I went to graduate school and was doing, you know, finished a PhD in applied math. And from there, I stumbled, it's just all, speaking of Forrest Gump, I just stumbled upon a guy who was working at Sun Microsystems at the time. And actually, we were at a dinner party and I was publishing my technical papers at the time. It was a dinner party hosted by a friend who was in the master's program with me, who had asked for a copy of it. And it was on a topic that was interesting to this guy at Sun. And then boom, suddenly I'm working at Sun Microsystems in 95, 96. This, of course, a lot of people don't even, you know, Gen Zers have no idea about Sun Microsystems, but that was a big, you know, in 95, 96, this was the birth of the internet. And Sun had this funny slogan at the time. Marty and Jill, you might remember, they presented themselves as Sun Microsystems were the dot in .com, which sounds terrible. Today, but at the time, right? Really? Like the .com thing was not a positive association for many, but Sun was at the center of the early build out of the internet. And so I just ended up working there for 3 years. There was some mathy stuff that I had done in my dissertation that we were applying to pricing and procurement problems at Sun Microsystems for physical goods. So how do you plan the procurement of things like microprocessors that lose their value at the rate of 1 or 2% per week in the face of all of this uncertain demand for the systems that Sun was selling at the time? So it was a cool optimization math problem.
Well, Sun, obviously, it was founded by Jim Clark, and then he was instrumental in co-founding Netscape with the team from University of Illinois. And that was the beginning of the commercial internet. So we had the Netscape browser. So you must have, of course, been aware of all that, Tom, and Jim Clark's efforts. And did it have an impact on you? And immediately you thought, I want to get into advertising because that's where it's at.
No, is the surprising answer, Marty. So I, of course,
you're like a no-brainer to me.
Bad turn.
So,
it was much more elliptical as has been all things in my life, it appears. But no, I was working in the policy managed networks team at some at the time. So a little lower down the stack and not, you know, aware of all the browser developments. So at that point, I left Sun because they were using my stuff and that was exciting. And then Cisco became interested. So Cisco was a titan, huge company at the time. And Cisco had an interest in what we were doing. And they recruited me to go and do the same thing that at Cisco that I'd done at Sun. Hmm. So I like to tell people in the way that naive, freshly minted Stanford PhDs will do, like, well, listen, if Sun likes it and Cisco likes it, I must have a juggernaut on my hands here. This must be a huge company.
Yeah.
Which, silly. I mean, maybe, but if they learned the long, hard way, not necessarily, right? But I hung the shingle out and started that first company, Wrapped, but I didn't know anything about advertising. So the first, the first part of the journey at Wrapped was developing supply chain optimization software for companies like Sun and Hewlett Packard and Apple and Seagate. So all of those companies became customers of Wrapped. In around 2004, my chronology is always terrible.
In terms of timing, though, you founded Wrapped in 1998. So it's
1990. We got funded for a Series A in June of 1999, Marty. So it was the height of the dot-com bubble.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That's the dot-com excitement was brewing there.
At the very top.
Did you find it very easy to raise money in that environment?
It was, I was a first time entrepreneur, so harder for first timers, but relatively, at that time, a lot of money was sloshing about. And so I got the company funded, which felt like a big deal.
Right. Yeah.
I remember, Excel, who was the VC who led the Series A at the time, shortly thereafter was having a CEO thing at Pebble Beach. And I show up. Again, I'm just a puppy at the time. I have no idea what's going on. I show up, it's Pebble Beach. Yeah. And all these titans of Silicon Valley, including Jim Clark and others, have their glasses up in the air doing the clinky clinky. Yeah. And I feel like I have no idea what you're all. I just showed up at the party. I knew it was moving and it's fast, but I wasn't on the inside. And so from there, everything collapsed, as we all recall, right? 9/11 happened.
Yeah.
We were selling supply chain software to these companies and we were getting those deals done.
Yeah.
But it also just became clear to me that our customers at the time did not want to buy from us. They wanted to buy from safe companies like Oracle and SAP. So in 2003-ish, Yahoo came calling, and Yahoo, as you recall, was one of the three horsemen of the internet at the time. And they said, listen, we have this problem where we're constantly oversold and undersold on our advertising inventory. That feels like maybe we should, if we just priced it better,
yield
we could
management.
Make more money. Yeah. Like yield management. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so we took
so
the call.
How did Yahoo hear about you? Cause you're in the supply chain space, right? You're sort of.
We're in the supply chain space.
Business.
Yeah. Yeah. Supply chain sort of.
I understand. I guess theoretically it's related, but how did Yahoo specifically hear about you?
I would just, and this is also a testament to Silicon Valley. Everybody's bumping into everybody else and constantly colliding and comparing notes. But this is back in the days, like I told you, Apple became a customer of Wrapped. I wasn't getting in the door. So I said, screw it. I'm going to email steve@apple.com. And sure enough, I wanted Dell to be a customer. I probably emailed, whoever was at Yahoo just looking for angles. And God bless them. They took the call. I tell people, and this is funny because I had no idea what CPM stood for. Literally. you know, in 2004. So Yahoo calls like, and it's CPM and the CPA and the what's all that about? So we just learned, right? And that's the game, is just learn fast.
Yeah.
We started to wrap our heads around advertising, and we discovered that all of the math that we had developed for the pricing of high tech components like microprocessors could be pointed directly and much more productively, by the way, at the problem of pricing and predicting ad inventory. So there you have it.
That was kind of a pivot, right, Tom? So what did you do with your supply chain business? Did you consciously shift out of it to a new business?
We did. And this is that company, Marty, as you recall, was acquired by Microsoft in late 2007. We burned the boats, basically. It just became clear, like, oh my God, supply chain is a rough, rough, rough place. And I'm actually quite proud of the fact that we showed up in a Business Insider article as one of the top 20 pivots of all time. Because again, like, you go supply chain to digital media modernization. It was a ridiculous kind of leap. By the end, when Microsoft acquired us, we had kind of transitioned out of those contracts with those legacy supply chain companies. Microsoft, AOL, and Yahoo became big, huge, successful customers on our platform. And then, as you recall, in like 2006, 2007, that's when the fragmentation happened in the internet, where everybody thought the portals, as we used to call them, would own everything. And then all of the publishers rose up and said, well, wait a minute, we can hang ads on our sites too, which created this huge opportunity for us. All of those media publishers kind of were following the biggies, and that created this nice follow-on opportunity for Wrapped, and then onward to, you know, Google bought DoubleClick.
Microsoft, I know, tried to acquire DoubleClick and then ended up acquiring Aquantiv and the Atlas Ad Server and AdECN and you guys and others. You know, they went on an acquisition spree.
Yeah.
Around that same time. So what was your role at Microsoft? Did you work with the Aquantiv team and the AdECN and Jeff Green and those guys? Or
I was on staff with all of those folks. It's funny. Okay. So Scott Howe,
that's right. Now,
CEO of LiveRamp, was our boss. And so Green was there and Aaron, who's now at Rover, Brett is over there with him. It was an interesting staff of people, working to, at the time, it felt like God's work. We're going to bring balance to the force. We can't have Google run away with the whole thing. Microsoft is going to create a platform for advertisers and publishers to monetize their ads. It was very inspiring at the time. And so I was the head of I was the GM of the publisher's online business in that group, the online services division. I learned a bunch at Microsoft. I spent about 18 months there. That's when a lot of the ideas for Crux really started to happen.
It sounds like the perfect breeding ground. So you took that show on the road and you co-founded Crux in 2010.
That's right. That's
what,
right.
What did you see? Like, what was the opportunity there? What did you see and what happened to make that happen?
At Microsoft, there was this picture that people used to throw around. And this is before, I think, I saw versions of this picture at Luma and other places, where you had publishers on the left side of the picture, and you had advertisers on the right side. You had a stack diagram that shows the infrastructure build out that's happening. And then there's this new layer at the top and a big cloud over the top. And it just has data in the cloud, right? And what it was evoking was this realization that, okay, we're peddling all of these ads, but the rectangle on the screen is much less important than who's looking at the screen. So if we could take data about who's looking at the screen and not get all caught up in our knickers about the rectangle, well, that might be high ground, right? That would be cool. That would be compelling. And I saw that from where I was showing up. And then this is also like, I'm coming at all of these problems from a mathier, sort of more computer science perspective. So I like those kinds of bottoms up infrastructure build outs. Yeah. And that just seemed super compelling. And that was kind of really the germ of what Crux eventually became. We had to, again, bring it back down to earth and get really practical about what we're going to build from there. But that's kind of where it all started.
Well, so where did you meet Vivek, your co-founder?
Vivek, I met in 1999. He was employee number one at Wrapped. He was the first engineer we hired at Wrapped.
He just showed up and you're like, this guy's smart.
Yeah. He just showed up. Yeah. We had gotten funded. Back to that note. Vivek, also very entrepreneurial, wanted to work in a tech company. And what he would do is he would just go to the websites of the Excels and Benchmarks and Sequoias and look for recently funded companies. And I told you, we had just done our round that summer. And so he, out of the clear blue, just called, came to our little office, met on the grass. Rest is history. Yeah. And he was the CTO of Wrapped at Exit and my co-founder and CTO at Crux.
Because he's also really interested in music and rock and roll.
You started Crux. What did you build and how did you describe it to customers?
Yes, that was painful, Jill.
If I recall, there was no DMP category yet. So you didn't even have a category.
There was no category. Yeah. Terry didn't show up with DMP until many years later. And so consumer internet data management, we used to call it CIDM or something like consumer internet data management, which is a mouthful and was, like I told you, was painful. but because we're trying to explain to our customers that, you know, the premise around that. And now everybody looks back like, of course, you know, the data. But in 2010, it's tricky bits, right? As you're trying to get companies to understand this opportunity and the imperative to actually treat data as a first-class citizen, right? You have to capture it. You have to harness it. You have to organize it. You have to analyze it. Then you got to put it to work. So at that time, as we do today, I had a lot of big feelings about how lots of third parties were coming in and skimming, borrowing, stealing other people's data. And we wanted to call attention to our publisher clients. Hey, wait a minute. That's your data. We used to have stickers. We put them on our laptops at Crux, and the slogan was Crux, it's your data. We wanted people to know that it belonged to them, not to any erstwhile partner or service provider who just showed up and happened to deploy their infrastructure to coast behind you and take your data. So protection was the first step. And then we wanted to move into managing it, right? So, okay, you've got it in a place. Let's start to, and at the time, segmentation, right? This isn't a skyscraper rectangle. This is a 42-year-old portfolio manager on the East Coast who manages over with household income of greater than $250,000. Like that was the data that you needed to kind of put, you need to capture and start to organize and analyze. And so segmentation became one of the central workhorse, really, of the Crux platform. And from there, we had to, and now to monetize, you have to take seriously all of those activation endpoints. I got to bring that data back to all of the other places where I needed to do what I needed to do. So that was the first push into the build out at Crux. Now, we were focused heavily on publishers, but our business plan always called for this leap forward into marketers, because if we could prove it in the high complexity, high velocity environments that publishers had, well, you know, marketers was a much larger space, and we felt like that was the thing to be conquered. Always part of the business plan. I remember when we first signed Kellogg's as our first marketer customer at Crux, people started to say, oh, I see that you're pivoting now. You're pivoting into marketers. And I would tell them, listen, well, you don't care about Wrapped, but Jesus, that was a pivot. This is not a pivot. That's how I stumbled upon you, Marty.
Yes. Right? Well, and the category DMP was interesting because it, you know, there were these companies like Demdex and then BlueKai even that appeared that weren't called DMPs. BlueKai in particular was a data platform, but not a data management platform. Did you like the category of DMP? Did you embrace it fully or not?
We have people from Crux who are still very dear and we get to work with frequently here at Superset. One of them is a guy named Matt Kilmartin, who has become the CEO of Habu, which is a data collaboration company that's come out of the Superset studio. Matt, at the time, alongside Mike Moreau, his co-founder at Habu, and others were coming to me and saying, Tom, the market is glomming on to DMP. And at the time, I'm sort of the village idiot listening to this and say, guys, DMP, how stupid is that? I mean, how hopelessly nondescript. Data management.
Like,
what do I even do with that? What isn't data management? You know, no, we're not playing along. So it was a nice little, and I was, of course, completely wrong, right? I mean, when the market decides, this is the name of the category, and that's my lesson learned. But it all worked out.
It did. Well, speaking of that, so Salesforce acquired you in 2016. At the time, what was Salesforce's vision, and why was that attractive to you, and why do you think Salesforce was attracted to Crux?
Yeah, the way we talked about it at the time, you know, especially in Salesforce's context, where Salesforce had moved, it had Marketing Cloud, which was heavily centered on email, and had made moves into this space. But Salesforce wants to show up as a software provider. And some of the prior go-rounds had them not just enabling ads, but playing in the ad space as a principal. So they really didn't want that. Mm-hmm. And of course, we had made what at the time was a controversial decision at Crux. I remember in the early phases, our publisher customers actually insisted in some of our contracts that we guarantee that we would never launch an ad business. Because of course, if you're a publisher, the idea of somebody, you know, operating all of this data, using it to build an ad business to compete with yours.
Yeah.
That would be terrible. So we had always shown up as a pure play SaaS provider in this space. And I think that that was one of the key things that made it interesting for Salesforce. I think the other opportunity that really glistened for all of us was, at the time anyway, of the acquisition, we used to talk about DMP as sort of the brain of the Marketing Cloud, right? So as this sort of central hub that could capture data from any number of places. And if we did our 100 pushups and got all of those outbound activation paths lit up the way they needed to be, you could support not just advertising. This was always my strong conviction. But it's about commerce. It's about cooler content. We had built a product for content recommendation and personalization at Crux that not enough customers, in my view, signed up for. But we believed, you know, and we were paying off that thesis in our product work. So I think those two things together made it interesting for Salesforce. It was not an immediate sort of one and done little dance. We started, a conversation with Salesforce. We were in partnership with them in market. And then at a certain point, it just reached, as these things frequently happen, it just reached a more poignant moment. And the rest is history. We ended up becoming part of my Salesforce in 2016.
Get your name out there.
What's Superset? Let's talk a little bit about that. What's the mission? What are you really excited about?
So Superset is a startup studio that builds what we believe are transformative software companies that center very heavily on data management. We like these puzzles.
Yeah.
I continue to believe that, if you're unpacking data management now in a less nondescript way, but more specifically as capturing, generating, analyzing, protecting, pipelining data, right? We're barely in the second inning of all of the challenges that belong to that sort of general space. We also like it over here because it gives us lots of degrees of freedom, right? Mm-hmm. Every company, every sector, every industry is still on the cusp of going through its own data, AI, machine learning revolution. In our enthusiasm for AI and machine learning, all of us over here at Superset feel like, well, in a context where we're all using most of the same open source machine learning models, 90% of which are TensorFlow from Google, right? What defines differentiation? It's people who are virtuosic with data. It's the data that you're using to train and feed and nourish those algorithms that really makes the difference. And so that's our long-term play. That's our long-term bet. On a more personal level, after Salesforce, I was sitting on a couch saying, my goodness, this company building stuff sure is fun. And please God, could there be more than one? You know, and it's just sort of kind of started like, can we parallelize company building? Can we take lessons learned from the prior 20 plus years? Can we capture those lessons and bring them to bear so that when we're working with new teams, as I like to say, why make old mistakes when there are all of these new mistakes just crying out for attention, right? So what we try to do over here is build new companies, but anchored on playbooks, right, that capture some of the things that we feel we've learned for things like infrastructure, go-to-market, product staging and sequencing, CRM. You don't have to start from scratch and invent the wheel, as so many entrepreneurs do, right? When you don't, again, you're going to get kicked in the head and there are going to be surprises.
Yeah.
But these patterns for successful company building are learnable. They recur. So let's not reinvent the wheel every time. We just don't think of ourselves as venture capitalists at all. We're builders with capital. There's a fund that supports our companies, at formation and beyond. But we write what we call the solution memo, which is sort of the analog to the venture capitalist investment memo, right? Before a VC invests in a new company, they have to write an investment memo that makes the case for the company's investment. We're upstream of that now and say, okay, here are the pain points, the prototypes, the, you know, the market opportunities, the customers, the buyers, the users. And there's still a lot of work to be done, but we've developed a product blueprint for what follows. That's sort of how the whole thing unfolds.
So you told us you're a musician. Love to hear your favorite artist or, you know, genre of music.
Jill, how much time do you have? I mean, I'm weird because I studied, you know, classical and jazz in a very serious way, you know, back in college and all the rest. And I still play all of that kind of music. But then, you know, I heard NWA in 1990 and that just, or 89, something like that. And then the rest, they got very heavily into hip hop. You know, I played and produced a bunch of hip hop stuff. I'm a huge hip hop person. I love, and now that we're older, you know, I used to spend time, and I'm also, now that I'm older, Jill, I've just decided to come clean. Like, I love clubs. I always loved loud music. I love going to, you know, EDM shows where it's just, you know, I like it loud. Thank you.
I'm personally a Beastie Boys diehard.
Ah, yes. Fundamental. Really important band.
No Sleep Till Brooklyn. Absolutely.
There you go.
Yeah.